I'm pleased to announce that it's the Great Debates.
Oh, hooray!
So formal, I love
it. I accept your announcement.
Welcome to the Great Debates, everyone. I'm Dan Medina, the moderator of the Great Debates. It's important to repeat our brand as often as possible to get it into people's consciousness.
I'm Dave King of the Great Debates.
I'm Steve Healy of the Great Debates. Without further ado, let's have a micro.
Next on the Great Debates, we'll have a micro debate. I'm going to put 4 minutes on the Great Debates timer.
Now, these are Brighams, right?
It's another week of Brighams, guys.
Healy brought them.
This week is Steve Brighams.
Steve Healy Brighams. He brought them. I've got them.
So Dave has not seen these. They're topics I came up with or derived.
I'm going to read them here on the Great Debates. 4 minutes on the clock. Steve Healy taking the pro. We're really missing Roger Ebert these days.
Okay. I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. I'm finding that we're in a world of a lot of online movie criticism, maybe one of the healthiest times ever for movie criticism. You can get so many takes from so many channels. Easily, you can find out 100,000 people's opinions of every movie you see, weight them. You can find lengthy essays about the films. But what I liked about Roger Ebert was over his long Pulitzer Prize winning career, you could really calibrate to him. He was a guy who was a steady movie going presence. He was respecting all genres of movies. He took movies as they were, judged them on their own terms. And I feel like we're really missing him. We're missing a solid, steady voice to interpret cinema for us, to be a starting place for the discussion, to be the sort of baseline critic that we can operate off of. In addition to that, I think Roger Ebert's public presence, his public persona, was a warm, positive, often serious one on political matters. And he was into black women, which I think was very cool. And Roger Ebert was great, and we miss him.
I mean, less than ever do we need a Roger Ebert. Less than ever are we missing Roger Ebert. We're fine. If you want to know if a movie is quote-unquote good or not, you have more instruments at your disposal than ever before. If you want to know what everyone thinks about it, you can go on Rotten Tomatoes. If you want to know what the cream of the crop of critics think, you can go to, you could go to a subsection on Rotten Tomatoes. If you want to know what people think, not whether it's good or bad, but an overall grade, you could go to Metacritic for that. There are dozens and hundreds of other places where you could go to find out what people think about it. We still have the great reviewers of the New York Times and the LA Times. And it's not like people can't have one trusted movie going critic for some reason. If you had said to me, we're really missing Siskel and Ebert right now, I might have agreed with you. Those guys together truly had something. And I actually think that Gene Siskel was arguably a better reviewer of movies and had better taste than Roger Ebert did. And I believe Roger Ebert's taste often skewed too much to the mainstream, too much to the sort of traditional tale, whereas Siskel was more open to the more experimental movie. And I enjoyed his reviews actually more than I did Roger Ebert. The other thing I got to say is, if you want Roger Ebert, we still have Roger Ebert. RogerEbert.com is one of the most popular movie review sites, and you can find all of his wonderful reviews in the library that is RogerEbert.com. You can, if you want, like, you could spend the rest of your life reading one Roger Ebert review a week and still and not run out. Roger Ebert isn't gone. You can watch My Life on Netflix, a fabulous documentary about his life. I would dare you to name two political stances that Roger Ebert took that we can remember that aren't us about some fucking film preservation or something like that. I don't really think that's a valid point. And we're doing fine. I've never heard. In fact, when the name Roger Ebert came up for this topic, I was like, there's a name I haven't heard in a long time. No one's talking about him. No one misses him. Healy, are you still debating me?
First of all, I really enjoy a beautiful Dave take buried in your argument is that Siskel was the greater critic than Ebert.
Absolutely.
Very Dave also, I think, speaks to one of your, I wouldn't call it a weakness, but a bias. Siskel, the Yale-educated, slightly more cerebral of the two critics, Ebert, the more working man, a little more Chicago earthy. Yeah, he played more to the mainstream.
Well, I have to tell you, the fact that you're pointing out that these two men had very different backgrounds was part of what made Siskel and Ebert so great. And you actually said that Ebert was known for like his warm, happy presence, but that's not the case at all. They bickered like hell on that show. That was part of what made it wonderful. Their appearances on Carson. The two of them, man.
The buzzer's up.
Ooh.
I know.
I'm going Davis.
Yeah, you better.
Yeah, I think it was a compelling argument. And you know what won it for me was the idea that we can go back and read all of Ebert's reviews and still watch those movies. There's so many movies out there.
Yeah.
Forget, if we never made another goddamn movie again, we'd be fucking fine.
Yeah,
there are so many movies out there to enjoy, and we need a guide like Ebert. Or his work to have been preserved so that we can find our way through all that shit.
Mm. Yeah, his books, like his, what are they, his favorite movies or whatever, those are, yeah, yeah, those, as you said, that's,
isn't
a
there
good
one that's
start,
like 400 movies,
100 yeah, movies,
watch yeah, them, read the review. Oh,
I did that. I read through the 50 greatest movies, is that what it is, and it was good times. It's a great tour of movies.
The 50 worst movies, would that be fun?
Well, I think yeah, he has a book that's called like Why Your Favorite Movie Sucks or something, doesn't he?
Oh, aggressive. Mm. Guys, I think we're into host chat.
I think we are.
And oh, okay.
It's kind of interesting because this is Listener Appreciation Week.
Oh, I had no idea.
God, which that's is always so great. Nice. It always sort of catches us by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to say, you know, thank you to our listeners. We do great debates. I think if we were the only three people left on planet Earth, we would still do great debates.
Because we would be listeners,
just to amuse ourselves and pass the time in uh-huh, the fiery hellscape yeah, that
our
we
moms
inhabited,
might listen to it.
But I really appreciate that we have listeners who plug into what we're doing mm-hmm, and like talking to us, send us topics, participate in the debates. I wanted to shout out a couple special listeners.
Fantastic.
If I may.
Wow, please.
Please.
And this is not to leave out anybody. I don't want to leave anybody out. This is more just these people having a burble to mind as sort of listener all-stars. First, I want to shout out Corey H. Sends
Corey
us a ton
yeah,
of tops on
yeah,
Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's always on the tops. Never met the guy. Love his passion for the debates.
Mm-hmm.
Similar character, Dustin F.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
listener, if you open the Great Debates email, you're going to see an email from Dustin F.
Yeah.
And it's going to have a top in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And thank God, I don't think we've used one yet, but keep them coming, Dustin.
Thank you, Dustin.
I want to shout
it
out McKenna L, listener McKenna L,
cool,
who I think is down there in Birmingham, Alabama or someplace. Don't know her, never met her. See her on the Twitter, supporting the debates. Seems to have a real enthusiasm for the art of podcasting, and I love it. Listener Emma H. Wanted to shout her out just as a representative of some of our cool listeners. She sent us an email. She's a scientist working on genetics, and I just love to hear from these listeners that are doing this interesting, weird stuff. And of course, was it a year ago that we did our live show in New York City?
Yeah, it was a little over
was
a year ago.
Was that 1 year ago?
Yeah, it was a year ago.
And some folks were at that event that were from Saskatchewan, Canada.
Wow.
And they decided that the live Great Debates was as good an excuse as any to make their first trip to New York. And they came to the live show and we got to meet them. And what a treat
I mean,
to have reached
a real treat
across the Canadian prairies. So thank you to all our listeners. Keep it coming. This is your
the best week.
Treat
on
yourself.
The show.
Yeah. To what?
To something.
Yeah, take yourself out for an ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and,
that's good.
You know, it's not on us, per se, but sort of metaphorically on
emotionally
us.
With us. It's emotionally
with
us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're with you right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we could buy you an ice cream, we would.
Whew. But we got a lot of tops to get to.
We do. So we're in Long June, as a lot of you know, and people are, you know, firing up their barbecues for the first time this season. So I had a quick top that I wanted to do. We're going to put
top.
Another 4 minutes on the clock. This is not a micro debate because that usually starts the show. This is a quick top.
Oh, okay. That's a quick top.
Yeah, we're going to go 4 minutes. Healy taking the pro.
Okay.
Cheeseburgers will continue to be popular.
I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Look, cheeseburgers themselves, as we traditionally understand them, pieces of grilled beef with cheese on them, are ever since they've been invented, they've stuck around. It's basically the oldest food known to man.
What?
Is a piece of an animal grilled over the fire with some of the animal's milk cured and put on top of it, and it will continue to be popular. Moreover, the definition of cheeseburger will continue to expand. I see a world where, in a laboratory, we're going to be coming up with all kinds of interesting new meats, new versions of the burger meat, and the cheeseburger will continue to remain a popular food. Kids love love it. Adults love it. It's an American tradition. You're going to keep eating cheeseburgers and you're going to keep loving them.
It is so clear that the momentum of history or that the current trend is hugely downward for cheeseburgers, for beef, for meat in general. 200, 400, 600, 10,000 years from now, there's simply no way that humans will still be consuming animals. And I believe that A, laboratory grown beef should not count as a burger. And B, I believe that even ethically, we will get to a point where even laboratory grown beef is considered immoral, inhuman. And for that reason, I feel like cheeseburgers are destined to become a relic. Also, this argument that they're one of the oldest foods that humans have consumed, truly, what are you talking about? Obviously, it's only in relatively recent history of humans that we've developed the technology to refrigerate meat, and before that, even to slaughter animals and cook them. We were obviously eating long before the invention of fire. It's not like it's pretty silly to claim that one of the first foods we ate was a cheeseburger. Obviously, the first foods we ate were grains and berries and, you know, you really stand by that the cheeseburger is one of the first foods that humans ate?
I think when we're talking about identifiable humans, yeah, we're talking about people who were cooking with fire and hunting animals and making essentially cheeseburgers. I think the cheeseburger would be recognizable to our Neanderthal ancestors as a delicious food.
You know what's an interesting word, Healy, is popular? Because now that I think about it, it's so clear to me already that what's popular is to not eat cheeseburgers. There's no way that the cool trend right now is that trend is to be vegan. It's to be environmentally conscious. It's to be conscious of the feelings and the consciousness of animals. It's to not eat animals. The popular kids right now are the ones who aren't eating beef. They're the one who aren't eating cheeseburgers. I really feel like the popular thing to do as time wears on is going to be even more and more to not eat cheeseburgers. They don't stand a chance of being popular. You're going to be laughed at if you eat a cheeseburger 30 years from now. You're going to be considered draconian. You're going to be looked at like someone who stones people to death for planting crops side by side. It's going to seem so archaic and outdated to eat a cheeseburger. You're going to look like a monster. As neuroscience continues, we understand what's going on inside the heads of cows, and we learn that they're capable of love and understanding that we never thought possible. You couldn't imagine taking a bite out of a cheeseburger.
I find myself taking a very Davian perspective here, which is very cynical and dark, but the fact is Dave is living in one of the most absurd bubbles of morality and fashion that's ever existed, which is Los Angeles in 2017. It's up there with like the world of Heian, Japan, or
not
like
just morality, it's also health. We are learning more and more the dangers of eating red meat.
The fact is, there's just
and
a
people
ceiling.
Are moving away there from eating red ceiling. Meat in record numbers. Every day, there's a different story about the dangers of eating red meat.
Whew. Quick top.
Medines, talk to us.
Okay, it's clear that Davis is right.
Yeah.
But that's not the question.
I think he probably won the debate.
Okay.
But I feel like I was 30 seconds away.
I feel like I won it with a buzzer beater.
I gotta tell you, man, like, it's obvious that cheeseburgers are not the oldest food around, but I desperately want them to be, and I love that Healy kind of ran with the bit.
There's no way.
I love that you didn't give in. That's very of the moment to not give in on facts that are not facts.
You gotta stand your ground.
So I thought that was a very stylish move.
Stylish.
And I was very compelled also by the idea that a Neanderthal would immediately recognize that a cheeseburger was a delicious thing to eat and would go for it.
That would be an interesting circumstance to travel back in time and give a Neanderthal like a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Mm. Yeah, he would probably eat the hell out of it and then hit you with a rock.
Yeah,
right?
He'd kill you. Yeah. man, damn.
I'm going to eat a cheeseburger after this recording session.
Oh,
for sure.
I think you earned it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
What else do you guys want to do?
Did I bring them?
Yeah, we got more that you brought.
Okay.
Are there any that you want to top about, or do you want to just bring them?
I leave that to the moderator.
Oh, okay. I like topping about things.
Do we have time?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, guys, I heard about a new trend among Great Debates listeners.
Oh, God, this is fake.
This is called talk about-ems. Oh. And it's you get a bunch of tacos with your friends, sample, people try different tacos, you talk about which ones are best.
Right.
You get like four friends, 12 tacos.
And you heard sharing. About this.
Yeah, I heard about this from listener Kim H. in New York.
That they were taco about-ems. Actually, now that you say that, I believe I saw that on Kim H's Insta story.
Yeah, right, okay.
And you're actually right.
I'm this totally right thing. That there's an yes. organic listener movement yes. of eating tacos and talk and sort of having little mini debates about
it. No, that's great. Good, damn. good.
Talk about them.
Top about the Bringhams.
I'm sticking with cheeseburger for my post-debates meal, but maybe tomorrow I'll have tacos. Okay, I want to talk about two tops.
Okay.
And then we can choose one to do.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not talk about them.
You're right. That's choosing a
that's
top.
That's not top. That's choosing. That's, well, that's choosing tops.
The only the tops left on Healy's list of Bringhams. Uh-huh. Danger is everywhere.
Okay.
Which I liked.
Weird.
Video games are getting worse.
Video games are getting worse. Okay.
I don't really have a sense of that.
I mean, I don't think they are.
Jesus of Nazareth was handsome.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Healy, what do you think?
I think it's an interesting top.
Maybe that's where we go. You want to defend his handsomeness?
I'll take either side.
Ooh, I have two more to read out.
Okay. Great.
Unless you guys are hot on Jesus is handsome.
No, let's hear what else he got.
It's fun to be a gay cop in Denver.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, Healy's like, yeah, I brought that one.
Uh-huh. Brought it.
Publishing a novel is more impressive than competing in an Olympic qualifying ski race.
So not an Olympic race, but an Olympic qualifying ski race.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of all those tops, Davis, Healy brought them. Which do you want to take?
Yeah, I mean, Jesus is interesting. Obviously, publishing versus skiing is interesting. Healy, what do you think?
To me, the classic top here is gay cop in Denver.
Oh, it is. Okay, but let's go ahead.
I love
go ahead, let's go. Go right now. Take the pro.
Okay,
go.
I'm taking the pro. I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Gay is fun. Those guys, they know how to have a good time, and they're having fun. Cop is a fulfilling, stimulating job with a lot of camaraderie and a feeling of probably quite a bit of thrill, as well as a feeling of upholding the moral order. Plus Denver. Denver's a beautiful city. There's bike trails. You're in the Rocky Mountains. The people that I know who live in Denver or thereabouts, they wake up and they're happy in the morning, skiing in the winter, going out on the trails on your mountain bike in the summer. I think being a cop is a good job with a steady pension. I think Denver's a relatively safe city. I think you can navigate your career as a cop different ways. If you seek out danger, you can do that. If you want to be the guy who checks in things in the evidence locker, you can do that. But I think there's no question that being a gay cop in Denver, if you had to be born into a random life, that's definitely in the top 20% of fun, stimulating lives.
What we have here is a classic example of the base rate fallacy. And Healy, I know what's going on here. I know what our listeners are picturing. You're focusing on the details of this person's life. You're focusing on their sexuality. You're focusing also on their occupation. The truth
is, that's what the top is, yeah.
Well, yes, the top, yes. And that just illustrates your misunderstanding of what base rates are. It's fun to be a gay cop in Denver. That's the topic, right? So obviously you're picturing a very specific person because you're giving this person all these details. But what I would argue is that it is not fun, generally speaking, to be a human being. It is not generally fun to live in the state of Colorado. It's not fun to live in Denver. It is also in no way fun to be a cop. And I think that a gay cop is simply a cop. And the fact of the matter is that the work of being a police officer is often either traumatic or boring. Most cops work absolute drudgery. You're sitting in a car all day. You're eating bad food. You're not having fun. You're not in pursuit of criminals. And if you are, it's in a dangerous way. There's nothing. I think there are very few police officers who would say that their job is fun. What you're trying to do is trick the listener into picturing a sort of like happy-go-lucky police officer by way of stereotyping them as a homosexual has like a sort of joie de vivre, which I think is, by the way, a little bit actually like buried deep in here, some sort of like, because you're so anxious to take the pro on this topic, I believe is a little bit of casual stereotyping of the gay lifestyle. Also, something that you probably even thought about yet is that this person might be a woman. And to be a female cop, a female gay cop on the Denver police force, suddenly you're a compound minority on the police force. I would say that that probably raises many challenges that the average person does not face. I don't think that's fun at all. I wouldn't want to be a female lesbian working on the Denver police force. I'm sure that there's a lot of misogyny. It's probably a boys club. I believe that as liberal a state as Denver is, or as Colorado is, that you're still in a metropolis like Denver where a lot of different people live. And I'm sure you're running into a lot of people both within the police force and without. By the way, we are at a point in time where being a police person of any type is more vilified than ever. It is more treacherous. It is more dangerous. More than ever, people are conscious of stories of police officers killing innocent civilians. What is fun about that?
Dave, as usual, displays a core level of cynicism and darkness that I think to the average viewer is dismaying and maybe even upsetting. I would love for Dave to find a way to work his way out of that and come to a brighter side of the street.
You know, it's not supposed to be fun. Here. It's not supposed to be fun to be a police officer. It's supposed to be difficult. It's supposed to be serious. You're supposed to be a steward of the law. You're not supposed to be out there having a good time. I would be upset, frankly, if I saw a police officer having fun. That is not their job.
Challenge, which is something you kept bringing up, stewardship, having an engaging job that requires a lot of responsibility. These things are not unequal with fun.
No, they're
fun can be a part of that mix. In fact, I think most people would say challenging things are, you're not going to have fun unless challenge and being energized, being engaged with people is part of fun.
Yeah, but the topic isn't it's engaging and challenging or satisfying. It's fun to be a gay cop in Denver. And again, there's nothing, yes, I get it. It gives you a sense of purpose. It gives you fulfillment to sort of like, I mean, now you're basically acknowledging that being a gay cop in Denver comes with a set of challenges and circumstances that are.
I would never, ever, ever overlook the challenges of being a cop. But I think people that become police officers choose that life. It's a difficult job to get. You usually have to get an advanced degree.
They're not choosing it because they want to have a good time. I'll tell you that.
I think that is absolutely part of it. I think that they are not choosing it purely out of the desire to be stewards of the community, although that is a valuable ingredient of it.
I think
if you ask most cops, they will honestly tell you, look, there's a lot about the job that's tough. I have hard days, but the camaraderie, the feeling of getting out there, I chose this life because I thought it would be engaging, interesting, and yeah, fun. And I think we've been uplifted, even as we're seeing a lot of vilification of police officers out there. For every incident like that, we see a video of cops dancing with kids, and we realize, like, in an ideal community, this is the way it's working. And most of our cops are good people who want that part of the experience. They know that being a cop is a spectrum where part of it is very challenging, difficult, and yes, even traumatic, but part of it is a lot of fun. It's getting out there, talking to people.
Well, of course, that's true of every vocation, but it's less true of police officers than almost any other vocation. I mean, you could, you've chosen a profession that is specifically unfun, almost by definition. And then, even though that's an obvious factor, that shouldn't be overlooked. And again, you're trying to throw Denver and gay in there to make it seem like these are automatically going to be fun things. Well, the truth of the matter is Denver, it's like rainy a lot of the year. It's not always fun. And yeah, if you're like a really outdoorsy person, then great. You're probably living in one of the better cities to be living in. But just because you're gay and a police officer doesn't mean that you like hiking in the mountains. It It doesn't mean that you like skiing. And the truth of the matter is, again, that even if you do like those things, 150 days out of the year, you can't do it because it's raining or snowing. It's also cold. Also, the elevation is higher. It's literally harder to breathe in Denver. If you're from, let's say you're from Florida and you've moved to Denver, it's going to take you a year just to acclimate to the altitude. You and I have been to a wedding near Denver, Colorado. We all talked about how exasperated we were after just walking up a flight of stairs. That's no fun. That's no way to live.
There are downsides to living anywhere. There's downsides to any kind of life. But on the all in all, picture the life of a gay cop in Denver, man or woman. And I think what you're picturing is someone who has chosen a line of work that they're no doubt finding engaging and satisfying, that they're able
those to... Those aren't fun. Those are almost the opposite of fun. It's satisfying. Would you say, if I asked you, hey, did you have fun today? Yeah, it was satisfying. I'd be like, no, what? That's not... What are you talking about? I asked you if you had fun. I didn't ask if you were satisfied. You've basically admitted that it's not fun. You're using words that prove that even in your mind, it's not fun to be a gay cop in Denver.
You've done a great job in this debate.
Yeah, I won.
Medina?
I think Dave just won at the end.
Oh God. All you got to do is say you won, and you won. Did
I
you
was
know
getting
that?
The wrap it up sign. I wanted to wrap it up.
That was good. Sorry. That was a good debate. I went back and forth more than once during this debate.
That's all we want from a debate.
That's what we're looking for, I think, right?
That is a sign of a true debate.
It's good. It was good. I was swayed. Guys, I'm really enjoying myself lately in the great debates. I don't know if you guys are, if you can tell, there's a lot of real energy. Maybe it's the way the sun shines in the great debate studios this time of year. I don't know, but there's something there.
It's fun to be a straight debater in Los Angeles. I'll tell you that.
That's true.
Well, you know, sometimes it's really challenging and boring, and you know, there's rainy days.
No, you lost, Healy. We all agreed that my argument was more substantial.
Healy, by the way, though, I did think that you made some really cool, uplifting, interesting points that I will take with me and savor.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to go figure out where I can get a cheeseburger. Guys, I hope you're enjoying Long June. Hope you're enjoying the great debates. Write to us, tweet at us. We're GreatDebate69 everywhere. As you know, we love to hear from you. Thank you to our listeners. It's Listener Appreciation Week. We couldn't do it without you. And we appreciate you that you're out there and that you reach out to us. Thanks for everything. And we'll see you next week on the Great Debates.
The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. Our audio engineer is Ethan Edenberg. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the program is moderated by Dan Medina.